A very good morning to you and welcome to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. I am David Ellis with you until 2 o'clock today, and with me is John Stout, who is the technical operator and producer. Well, let me start today's program by extending condolences to all of you who have lost loved ones in recent days, generally. It's not just COVID, but there are other things that have been claiming lives in Barbados, not just in the recent past, but, you know, generally speaking. But at this time, it's exacerbated by the loss of loved ones through COVID. As we speak, we look at these significant figures which have been released. February 13th, that's the last dashboard that we've seen. 2,268 total cases overall. New cases up to February 13th, 207, that's what we've been told. 24 deaths. And the situation continues to look very serious. At the same time, the government has before it now a decision to make. What exactly can be done in light of the fact that for 2 weeks we've had this so-called pause? It hasn't been called a lockdown, I suppose, largely because it is not a complete lockdown. It's a pause in certain areas. There are some of us who advocated that the pause was necessary to try to break the cycle, but it does not appear as though that has worked. So we are on the horns of a dilemma right now. Well, this morning, the SAGICRA's early birth business, I spoke with the president of the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners, Dr. Linda Williams, and I reduced it to about 5 minutes or so, but we spoke for about 10 minutes, and therefore what I want to do at this stage is to let you hear that entire 10-minute piece as we asked Dr. Williams to give us her assessment of the figures that have been presented to us up to February 13th.
These figures are, I guess the short answer is not good. From January 28th, there have been 791 new cases reported, and that represents more than a 50% increase over what we had prior to that period. We've had 13 deaths since then, which is a 120% increase prior to that period, and that's up to today. As you can see from the latest dashboard, there are 207 new cases, and these would have been over a number of days, admittedly, but the 207 new cases out of 1,222 tests is a positivity ratio of 16.9%. Now, we know that there were issues with the testing in the lab, and so there was a delay. So this is representing now the backlog of tests being cleared. So they are now, you know, you see the testing numbers increase. So the backlog is being cleared, and that's why we're now finding these larger numbers that were in the backlog. What this means is that these people who are now receiving these results would not have known that they were positive. And we hope and pray that while awaiting their test results, they remained at home and that they were not mixing in society. But we don't know that for sure. We hope they were quarantining once they had their test done. But if they weren't quarantining, then this obviously poses a problem. And this kind of picture we have seen also in other countries where the new variant, the UK variant, is present. So I think that overall, although we can't test each person to find out if they are having the UK variant of the COVID-19 virus, this kind of increase in transmission, and of course, increased transmission translates to increased deaths, has been seen in the UK and other countries where the UK variant is present.
Since you have indicated that this latest figure suggests to us what has been in the backlog, what's missing here is there's no distinction between the backlog and the most recent cases that are reflected in these figures. Isn't that necessary?
It's ideal. I would put it that way. It is ideal. Of course, we want to get to the place where the cases that we report are for the previous 24 hours, right? Or at the most 48 hours. But we had a backlog caused by the delay of arrival of reagents for the lab. And so this backlog is now being cleared. It would be ideal, of course, to have for 24 hours, but we can only talk about the ideal because right now that's not what's happening. And so we have to talk about what we have.
What are the implications for BAMP and its doctors?
Well, right now we have a situation where we are stretched. We are stretched in terms of our human resource capacity. We have to try to mobilize more doctors to assist with the isolation facilities, and that's happening, okay? But also it means that our doctors have to take more care when seeing patients in office. And also this means that we have to assume, just like everyone in society, should begin to assume that the person around you could be positive, no matter how they look or appear. So if we all treat everyone around us as positives, then we will not slip or slag on our precautions of social distancing and mask wearing and hand washing. We recommend that our doctors, if they're not using them, that they use N95 masks at this time because of the increased risk.
Elsewhere in the region, some doctors have reached a point where their associations issue directives. Is that likely here?
It can happen. I am not going to rule it out. When you say directives, I know what you're meaning. You're meaning in terms of how we carry on our practices. It could happen here if things don't improve. We have to look at the many options of seeing people, but to some extent it's been happening here already. We use telemedicine, telephone medicine, and see emergency cases in office. That has been the case in some countries, and if we look at how things progress here, we may have we've already told our members to take the utmost precaution in how they see patients. I know that, for example, in Jamaica and in Trinidad, there came a place where in-office visits were not recommended. We can't say that as yet because we have a large NCD population who needs monitoring, and in order to have that restriction, we would have to put things in place for our population to continue to be monitored. It's not just a matter of going to the doctor if you feel sick, because there are lots of people who need monitoring because their control of their diseases is not good. And so we would know, we've been looking at all along, putting things in place, how to get people to monitor their pressures at home, encouraging people to take their own blood sugars, encouraging asthmatics to do their peak flows and report. So these are the things we've been encouraging all year long, but we may need to put things in place to do so in a more organized manner.
What will influence any further action in this regard?
Well, I think one of the things we have to look at now is whether or not we continue in the lockdown. Needless to say, these numbers and the current situation isn't a good situation. We don't want people to panic, of course, because panic then spreads disease and spreads fear. But we need to really be mindful of the fact that there are people still who are breaching protocols left, right, and center. I heard on the news just now that there are a number of cases to be brought today against people breaching protocols. And as long as that's the case, and there's still a lot of movement on the roads, there will be still potential for spreading the disease. If that is the case and that goes on, and we go into a continued lockdown or a further lockdown or further restrictions, I should say, in lockdown, then we will really have to look at how our practices continue in this lockdown.
What is MAMP's recommendation as it relates to the lockdown?
Well, I can't put out a recommendation necessarily to before the government makes a recommendation, but my personal opinion in this is that we haven't turned the corner as a country at all. And since we haven't turned the corner, we have to continue to do measures or to take measures that will cause us to be able to turn that corner. It would be nice to say we could appeal to the reason of people and just people be reasonable, but even with restrictions, people are not reasonable. So I think we have to continue to put those stay at home and restrictive measures in place so that mixing will not continue. You know, I was at the beach the other day and heard a woman say to another that she was awaiting her test results. And she was in a group, a party of people at the beach together. And so once we have that, once you have people who you know you're symptomatic, you were exposed to someone who was symptomatic, you're a primary contact, and you went and got tested, but you're at the beach, you're in the supermarket, you're all about, as long as we have those kinds of situations, then the disease will continue to spread.
That's Dr. Linda Williams, who is the president of the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners. She's also an epidemiologist. Now, this person wrote to say that I must confess that the logic behind some of the restrictions that have been imposed escapes me. If you restrict the population to being at the beach only during a fixed 3-hour period in the day, it is inevitable that the beaches will be more crowded than usual. It should either be no beach at all or leave people free to go to the beach any time of the day outside of the curfew. They go on to say, I've been going to Browns Beach for morning exercise between 5:30 and 8 from before the pause. And the crowd then is about a quarter of what I am seeing now. People are now going to wear a mask, or people are not going to wear a mask exercising or swimming at the beach. And with so many people there at the same time, social distancing is nigh impossible. I also want to add, the same thing applies to people who walk early in the morning and people who jog. I can't understand the logic behind ending the curfew at 6 o'clock in the morning. What's wrong with doing it an hour earlier? Because it's pushing far too many people together after 6 o'clock in the morning. The writer went on to say that a similar issue exists with the supermarkets, that they have not been experiencing any crowds at supermarkets except for Popular until after this pause was announced and imposed. They say, I'm still trying to understand why supermarkets have to be closed on Saturdays, and hence all supermarket shopping is now squashed into shortened hours Monday to Friday. The result with both the beach and the supermarket restrictions is the creation of a potential super spreader situation. So this is down to brass tacks. Hello, good morning.
I'm here, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing, man?
I'm okay.
Look, I called merely to support you with your conversation last Friday with some person that called in talking about the care packages, right? And I completely 100% agree with you that everybody that get the care packages would not use them for themselves, but would pass them on for somebody. And I did wondering about it, right? But I come across two persons. Matter of fact, one is an accountant, and the next is a well-to-do guy. And he said to me, you know, I receive my package, but I didn't keep it for myself. Actually, put some more goodies with it and pass it on to some person that I know in desperate need of these things. So that's merely what I want to say. And still on the care packages, though, David, who come up with this concept?
I don't know. Why is that important?
Because I am saying that the person that come up with this concept, I know that it has some government attachment to it, right? It's a wonderful and brilliant idea. You understand? This is one out the box. This is one really fun to touch us.
But right? How different is this from the one that existed last year when the Sandy Lane Trust gave the government, the government ministers support? And they then took the care packages out into the community. What is so markedly different from what was done back then?
It is so different because the pathway is different. This care packaging did not go into the politician's hand, right? Check who is leading the charge to distribute these packages, right? And that is the background that he's speaking of, right? I am saying that with something like this, You implore the defense force to man this situation, to man this handing out. And it's completely different to the Sandy Lane Trust. It's completely different to the thing that you get at Christmas time, the gift vouchers. So I am saying this is one out the box. This stand alone, David, and the boy that come up with this concept really should commend it. Should be commended, you know. I really all for it, and what I understand about it is not a discrimination. Every single household getting the packages, right? So kudos to who led the charge in this, man, right? And one other thing, look, I better left that because Christians been asking about you, if what they hear some time ago, if it is true that you winding down, I can't answer that. I left that to you to connect with your listeners. So that's the part that I will left out. So
I can only say to you that I winding down and I winding up.
You winding up too? How much winding up you could do? Anyhow, you know what it means when it's winding down, though.
Don't worry about it. It will be all right in the morning.
Okay. All right, buddy. Good, thanks.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Well, good morning. Let me welcome for a short period Reverend Dr. Marcus Lashley, who is a psychologist practicing here in Barbados. Some days ago, he sent me a private message. In that private message, he suggested that perhaps we needed to pay a bit more attention to suicides. And only yesterday, we had a suicide in the country. I've asked him to come on air to talk with us a little bit about this particular situation. So let's background why you would have sent me that WhatsApp message a few days ago, Reverend Dr. Marcus Lashley.
Good morning to you and good morning to listeners. Thank you for having me. I have been monitoring the suicide rates in the pandemic period, especially during the last quarter of last year. And it's hard to get official statistics or for people to report on this nationally. But certainly funeral directors will tell you that it is a matter of concern. And whenever we come to periods where people are under extreme stress, then the suicide rate will go up in any country. And in countries where going through the pandemic, they've been reporting and looking at this very carefully, they've noticed that this trend holds true for them. And I suspect then it will for most other countries in the world. So I sent the note to you because I also had asked the clergy of the Anglican Church that it's time for us as a body to revisit our own protocols and to do a little bit of a refresher in this specific area of pastoral care and counseling, because the need inevitably will come. Now, granted, not everyone in Barbados will go to a religious leader in moments of crisis. And so in recent days, I know that, much to the credit of the government, a hotline has been established for people who need to have direct access to a counselor. So I think that Barbadians need to know that they have a few more options than just a clinical social worker, a psychiatrist, psychologist, pastoral counselors, and so on, available to them, because people need to know they have options. And one of the things that we know in dealing with cases of persons who are attempting suicide is that for them, the options seem to be narrowing. And once they get that tunnel vision and they have limited options, then the potential for a successful suicide becomes even greater.
How many of these people have you encountered yourself, and what are they telling you?
Okay. In my own work as both priest and psychologist, there are a number of people who are telling me about the extreme stress that they're under at the moment. They are talking about frustration. And believe it or not, some of the people who are complaining about the level of stress they're under are actually parents. Parents who are now both homeschooling and trying to work online remotely from home. And the reality is that very, very small children, for example, can't appreciate the fact that while mommy and daddy or daddy may be at home, they are not fully accessible either physically or emotionally to them because they are at work. That concept, of course, cannot be fully comprehended by a 3-year-old child or 4-year-old child, etc. And I think that many parents in the past couple of months have developed a new and greater appreciation for the work which teachers do on an everyday basis in this country, along with having to admit that, much to their shame, that the child that they thought was so bright may not be as bright as previously believed. So they're struggling with how to keep children, sometimes more than one, engaged, focused on work, while at the same time giving the appropriate breaks, while they continue themselves to either find a way of bringing in income through a side stream at home, or legitimately being engaged in their normal occupation, but remotely from home.
What advice would you give to people who find themselves in that position right now?
I do know that many of the teachers, for example, who are doing online teaching have really gone away and above the call of duty by looking at additional sources for engaging children during this period. And I hope that what both the Ministry of Education as well as the teachers' unions could possibly do is to find a way of making some of these avenues more accessible to parents as they try to augment the work done by teachers, and therefore easing a little bit of the stress off of them. While I say that I must advocate as well for greater support to be given to teachers as they go through this process, because they are not immune from the level of stress. Secondly, I hope that some of these individuals, especially parents and members of our community who are under the level of stress they're under, whether it is emotional stress, relationship stress, financial stress, that they would know that they have more options than they think they do. We have a number of clergy across the island who are accessible and readily so. We have a number of retired persons who could be of assistance in terms of the academic piece, and they'd be happy to lend whatever assistance they can give. We do have a situation where I think that our financial institutions can do an awful lot more in directly communicating with our citizens in terms of helping them understand the financial options that are before them, the levels of concessions that can be accessed. And I'm serious about this latter part, because I think that Barbadians, by and large, feel a tremendous obligation to pay their bills. And so living in debt is not something which we take great pride in doing, as is the case in some other countries overseas. And so knowing that you have some options would be helpful. And I think maybe putting on a couple of programs, either on your Sunday program for Brass Tacks or other avenues, would be, I think, ideal, because at the moment we get an awful lot of information about health and COVID, but not a lot of information about financial resources, banking options in terms of lines of credit or other avenues to ride through this very difficult economic period. And of course, the government has established a hotline, and so people can call into that hotline and be able to have a direct conversation with a counselor, where either the finances will not allow them to see a paid professional, or they don't have enough of an access to a faith community as part of their regular life to choose that option.